Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to the show. I have a real treat for listeners today because my guest is a dear friend who I have known ever since I very first moved to this area back in 1991. She cared for me when I was sick. She shared her food and taught me about parenting and surviving in this very difficult area, which it was way more difficult back then than it is today. It's just truly an honor to introduce Lisa Stewart, who has helped so many people in our community. She's opened her gracious home, fed us with her amazing food. She raised amazing children to homeschooling them at times, donated so many volunteer hours to our community, to our local dance studio, the Creative Arts Center, and just tons of other the schools, and helped out all over the place. And just to me, Lisa is like the ultimate woman who lived off the earth, would haul water from the creek like you wouldn't believe, this freezing cold creek all year long, splitting firewood, canning thousands of cans of food, just sharing with all of it. I mean, like when I say taking people in, this woman took in like dozens of people at a time to help us survive when we were back in the day when Mike and I met planting trees. And just I'm sure her knowledge will amaze you what she has to share today on just living a very wholesome, down-to-earth, natural life. So welcome to the show, Lisa. I'm so excited you're finally here.
Yay! Hey, Jack.
So that's just kind of a little introduction. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm going to try to live up to your introduction. Thank you so much. I realized when I was preparing for this that I have lived in the valley for 30 years and that I've grown gardens in a deep, shady, moist, cool mountain location for half of that time and a prairie, full sun, dry, windy location for the other half, and I'd like to think I've mastered both of those, so I kind of had to have a wide breadth
you
of experience.
Do. And you and your place up in the mountains was a very tough place to survive, I think. I mean, compared to where we are, just a little bit lower elevation, but I don't know. So, and now you're out north of town where you get plenty of sun, huh? Kind of the prairie, and,
Full sun, shade. Getting shade is the problem now.
So the first question I'd like to ask everybody is just to kind of warm up and tell us about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? You know, what'd you grow? Who were you with? How big was it? And that was
in Wisconsin? Go ahead.
Is that right?
It was. I was fortunate enough to grow up in the great state of Wisconsin where the topsoil is literally 6 foot deep, black earth. I always like to say you can throw a seed at it and it will just grow something spectacular. My mother grew up on a farm, so she always had a garden. I think I've been in the garden since I could sit. My very first garden in Montana is kind of a unique story. It was way up there deep in the mountains. We were carrying water from that creek you're talking about in 5 gallon buckets with holes drilled in the bottom to water the garden. I've always had the luxury of really big gardens, so this was a really big garden. The problem was the range cattle. People out there in the world may not know that in Montana, the range cattle range pretty much everywhere unless you fence them out. It's your obligation to fence the cow out. And we had this garden that we protected from the cows day in and day out that was doing very well. And in maybe August, we had visitors, and we all left and went to the lake for an hour and a half, and we came home, and the garden was gone, and the cows were laying in it.
I remember you telling me this story.
It was pretty devastating.
And so they ate it, or they just laid on it, or they were, or both. They just like were in it everywhere and just.
Oh, they ate the whole garden. Was gone. There was, you know, nary a thing to be found. And then they laid in it. they laid in the dirt that was left. Yes, it was disheartening, to say the least.
So then what'd you do the next year? Build a stronger fence or something? Or how were you keeping them out? How'd you keep them out at night? Or they just didn't go in there at night?
Well, we had dogs. At that time, I lived in a teepee, which was pretty close to it, so you could hear pretty clearly what was going on. You know, it was a vigil.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a great way to start out our show. And just, I love the part about hauling, because we both hauled water in 5 gallon buckets, although we didn't do much of that for our garden. That must have been crazy to
haul water from the
creek. Yeah.
It was a lot of work, although, you know, in defense of that hauling water, the creek was right there. There, you know, I realized later on in life that there are people who really haul water. I hauled water from a pretty close
spot. I always say I would do it again, but only if we had water on the property. I would never haul water from another place and never live without a propane fridge.
Yeah.
Living out of a cooler ever again.
Yeah, I lived out of a cooler for a long time.
Yep. We did it for a year, and that was 1 year too many for me.
But, yeah. Okay,
so tell us, what does organic gardening or friendly gardening mean to you?
Well, I've never considered gardening any other way. Mm-hmm. So it's not a thought that I carry with me a lot. But when I stop and think about that, I think it must be a lot of work, more work, to keep up with pesticides and things that you're putting on your garden than just paying attention to your garden and dealing with problems as they come. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. So then who or what, like, did your grandmother use organic techniques? Did they garden that way? Or is that what inspired you? Or who inspired you to go organic?
Well, there wasn't really a question. When I moved here, I guess I would say that I was a back to the lander, and there was no question that I was going to garden unorganically. My grandparents did have a farm, and they gardened organically. Everything was used, you know, in those days, everything was used. My mother was an organic gardener too. So like I say, I never thought about doing it any other way.
Mm-hmm. So then is that how you learned how to do it? From them, or did you, you know, study anything, read any books, or?
Well, I studied and read all the time. I think that going from a life in a rural place, but a different rural life, to a life of living off the grid completely is a big adjustment. And so you have to teach yourself. And in those days, there wasn't communication like there is today.
Right.
I didn't even have a phone. Mm-hmm. So books were the answer.
And you were big about driving to the library, I remember, with the kids. And you would go way out of your way to use both the Eureka Library, but also to go all the way to Kalispell to that big library. And just
absolutely. I was determined that my children were going to see a big library.
Tell us about something that grew well this last season, last year.
Well, I grew an heirloom garlic that is local to this area. I got it from an elder. I can definitely pinpoint the date that I remember, because it was when I moved here. So that would have been 15 years ago. And I'm sure we grew it 5+ years up in the mountains too. But at the time we received it, it had already been grown in the valley for 30 years.
Oh.
So I'm pretty protective of my garlic crop. I always have about 400 to 600 cloves planted every year.
Wow.
And if my garlic crop is doing good, I'm doing good. So that's something that's tried and true for me.
So then
I take care of. Go ahead.
What do you do with all that garlic?
I give a lot away. I replant a lot. I use a lot. I mean, I consider it a real gift myself. I have enough garlic that I can do whatever I want with it.
That's interesting because the other person I just had Kathy O'Leary on, you probably know her, on Thursday, and she talked about growing garlic a little bit too. And then I haven't had anybody before that on talking about garlic.
Oh.
But so do you have any secrets for growing garlic? She talked a little bit about planting in the fall. Do you have any like tips for people if they want to start growing garlic? And
well, you plant garlic in the fall and you harvest it the next year in August. I generally harvest in August. You have to dry it really well, and you have to keep it somewhere cool and not moist. You want it to be fairly dry. I think what I tell people, I have shared a lot of this garlic and mm-hmm. and given some to people to start their own beds of garlic with, and what I tell them is, for every clove, you get a bulb. Every time you plant it, for every clove, you get a bulb. So I times everything I plant by about 8. And really, bulbs can be 8 to 12, but I times it all by 8.
Okay. So you take a clove, and then how deep do you plant those? Or do you plant them in rows, or in, I guess it must be in rows. It's not in like... raised beds or anything, is it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
I garden in raised beds. Mm-hmm. I have 24 raised beds.
Oh my goodness.
And right now I have 5 beds full of garlic. You know, maybe 2 inches. Uh-huh. I've planted so much garlic that I don't really even think about it anymore. Mm-hmm. Mulch. I mulch it. The first year that we grew garlic here, and by here I mean on the prairie, mm-hmm. we planted a lot of pounds, 100 pounds probably or more, and planted it out on the prairie and didn't mulch it and came back and I lost almost my, I saved my garlic crop by the seed. I always keep the seeds of my garlic. Always, always, always. And I saved this particular heirloom garlic by having the seed. Mulching is really
important.
What's
the difference between the seeds and the cloves then? The seeds grow on top?
Well,
like from the...
Yes. So, like an onion, like any kind of allium, if you let them go to seed, what a garlic produces is a little round ball. I don't know, like about as big as a pea. Some people don't do that. Some people cut it off and let all that energy go to the bulb to create a bigger bulb. I tend to sometimes cut about half my crop and keep the other half because I would never, ever be without my garlic seed.
Oh, okay. Cool. Awesome. All right. How about something you're excited to try this year, something new or something different? Going to do anything different this year?
Well, I've gotten into growing flowers, which is kind of new for me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty into it. And dahlias and gladiolas are the things that I love. I have a big greenhouse, so I can afford that leisure, that pleasure to do that. And every year I buy a different color, shape, or size. And it's like a little treasure hunt, you know, to see what comes up.
Cool.
So I'm always pretty excited about my dahlias.
I'm really into flowers. I plant more flowers. My goal this year is to plant 750 sunflowers and harvest 2,000 sunflowers. And I have 75 seeds in the ground so far.
And what are you going
to
do with
them? They're starting to sprout. And then, and hopefully this week I'm going to get out there and get, as a matter of fact, Mike said I could put some in today.
What are you going to do with?
Eventually, I would like to sell them, but this mm-hmm. year, I just want to see, like, can I do it, like, in the staggered rows so I have them coming up all through August through September, you know? Like, can I be consistent? I might take some buckets of sunflower if it goes really, really well. I don't know if I'm quite ready for that, but I'm just going to see how many can I grow and how I just want to learn about this year. I'm not quite ready mm-hmm. to do the whole market thing. But maybe.
Right.
We'll see.
I've always thought that sunflowers would make a really cool bird feeder.
Yeah. The birds love them, you know, and we buy a ton of sunflower seeds to feed the birds all winter long, like two or three of those big, giant, I don't know, what are they, 32-pound bags or whatever they are, those giant bags that you buy.
And, so you could just hang a dried sunflower out.
And so, but the hard thing, I think, in Montana is getting them to go to seed. I think it's hard to actually get them to produce seeds. But if, you know, I always, Mike was like, are you sure you can plant them? I'm like, I'm pretty sure if I don't have them in the ground by Earth Day, I have a hard time getting the seeds. So already I'm late. That first row I planted, I was doing good. I put them in on 420 and then I thought I was going to do, you know, every couple of days and then once a week and already what are we at May and haven't been back. So it's my typical gardening journey. All excited in the beginning, but we'll see. All right, so tell us about something that didn't work quite so well last year, Lisa. Anything that didn't go the way you thought it would?
Well, I continually struggle with growing those really, really cool crops here. So that means lettuce, spinach. Yeah. I can get that first one in the early, early spring, but after that, I get really hot, really dry, and really windy. So someday, maybe... Someday maybe I'll figure that out, but at this point, I don't put a lot of extra effort into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, especially once August comes, lettuce. I was looking, there was one year I had lettuce all the way through to September, but a lot of times the lettuce and the spinach definitely bolt for sure, even here.
Well, when I lived in the mountains,
I was just gonna ask you
I could grow it all season. I mean, I just had... you know, lots and lots and lots of that kind of thing. It was the other stuff I couldn't grow up there. Now I can grow the other stuff, but the cool crops are harder.
How about something you find that's easy to grow and generally successful every time?
Well, obviously the garlic. I guess I'd go to my garlic.
Okay.
You know, that's a for sure crop for me. Now, if I don't do anything else, I'm doing that.
Did you grow garlic up at the other place?
Yeah, that's where we started it. We had beautiful, beautiful beds of garlic up there.
Okay. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
Well, my climate is different from where I live to the bottom of the road. It's really kind of strange. There's a lot of microclimates right particularly where I live. And when I was thinking about that question, I was thinking I would steer a new gardener in this area away from growing anything that's over 90 days because Mother Nature really plays with us here. I mean, we have short growing seasons to begin with. And, you know, I remember one year having a beautiful, beautiful garden and getting 6 inches of snow on August 20th. And it wasn't necessarily the snow, because the snow had melted off by that afternoon, but it was the weight of the snow on everything that broke it. So, you know, I'd plant, if I was a new gardener, I'd plant short season things.
Okay. Can you give us like any example? Can you just, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but some things that are short season things for listeners maybe that are new to gardening?
Well, lettuce is one of the shortest. Spinach is right behind it. Radishes is pretty short. You know, peas are pretty short.
Yeah.
Most things you can find a 90 day or below seed. The things that I think are harder is a winter squash is pretty hard. A tomato is pretty hard if you don't have a greenhouse. You know, those things are 100 plus days.
Now, did you ever grow tomatoes in like a greenhouse and then start them and then, or buy starts even?
I have done all of that. I have started my own tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers. I grow in the greenhouse right now. I grow cucumbers. I grow all kinds of peppers, tomatoes. Sometimes if I have enough room, I'll grow melons. And I've done all those different ways. On the prairie, I can do that. On the prairie, I could never do that up at the other house.
Oh, you can. Okay. So tell me, what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, is there anything that you have to force yourself to get out there and just go do that you just dread?
Well, weeding's pretty continual.
Oh, okay.
Weeding is not my favorite job. I can be a pretty lazy gardener. I can be the person who's, I just look at it and go, oh, just not today, you know. Uh-huh. But I always get more than enough food, so apparently I'm doing something right.
Good point.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody, I can't imagine you ever really being lazy. Maybe you have a lazy day here or there, but you make up for it on other days.
Yeah.
How about your favorite activity to do in the garden? What do you just love to do out there?
Well, I like to plant it, and I like to plant it. It's always a good feeling to have my seed in the ground. It's a very grounding feeling in a really busy life that can sometimes be crazy. The most grounding thing I do is gardening and growing food. That, to me, is it's the bottom line to everything.
Do you just want to expand on that a little more and kind of tell me like a little more about what that means, sort of?
To be grounded in my garden?
Mm-hmm.
I find that when there's a lot going on, you know this, but the rest of the world doesn't. I lead a really busy life with a lot of people in and out of it, crews and big projects and a lot of things going on. And gardening is the thing that centers me in that, mm-hmm. and it always has when I look back. And the food that comes out of it is something that I get to share with people. I've fed a lot of people at my table in the last 30 years, and the majority of that food has come out of that garden.
Nice. And that's definitely true. You have taken care of, I mean, you and Leroy are probably two of the kindest, most generous, gracious, share everything, the shirt off your back people I've ever met. And I've just seen you give so much to so many people, like unconditionally, and just opened up your homes and taken in strangers or cold little hippies or just anybody who needs anything, you know, people that have worked for you or, and that's another thing that you guys do. It's help provide jobs, I think, in our community. So, just very, very kind, very giving. And the fact that you've grown so much of that food and you worked so hard to grow it. And while you were raising those kids, at the same time, just up in a really tough, isolated place, I just have so much respect for you.
Yeah, well, I was definitely younger. I think about that and I'm like, how did I do that? But
I don't know.
I did.
It amazed me. You were like this Wonder Woman. I had never met anybody like you, you know, and especially like when I came up here, I was so like naive and just, I still remember when they were handed me a hoedown and they're like, swing it like an axe, like you're splitting wood. And I'm like, I just looked at them. I'm like, do I look like someone who's ever split a piece of wood in my life? Like the whole thing was so new to me. And like, I had come up out of Whitefish and thought I was like in the middle of nowhere. You know, I hadn't ever made it to Fort Tyne or Eureka. And I was like, at Murphy Lake, like thinking I'm 50 miles out in the middle of nowhere, which it kind of is, but not as far as I was. I remember the first time I walked into the Fort Tyne Mercantile and thought I'd found like the bestest place in the whole world, the biggest gold mine. Just able to buy a bagel. I was like, oh my gosh. I thought I had to go all the way to Whitefish to do this, which is like 45 miles away.
Right.
So, tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year that you had a crop of something or a huge, you know, produce that just amazed you?
Yeah, I remember one year actually growing acorn squash from seed, because you can also grow acorn squash from starts, mm-hmm. planting seed in the ground and harvesting literally wheelbarrow loads of acorn squash. That was a pretty good year.
And what do you think made that so successful that year? Was there anything that you did different, you thought, or just?
No, it was absolutely Mother Nature and the grace of having a longer season, because that was up in the mountains where you really shouldn't, if you have any sense, you shouldn't be doing that anyway.
Yep. And just, it just was prolific that year, huh?
It was just the perfect storm.
How about the best gardening advice you ever received?
I remember getting grass clippings to mulch my garden, and an elderly woman that I happened to be with at that time said, if you put grass clippings in your garden, you will grow grass. And of course I did, and of course I do.
Really? Did you just put the plain grass? Because we put grass in our compost all the time. I think that's, I love to put the fresh cut grass from the lawn in the compost.
Yeah, well, I have fought with grass ever since.
Oh, okay. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Well, for me, the obvious answer is a shovel. If I think about it, I can do pretty much anything with a shovel. You can't dig a hole with a weeder, but you probably could weed with a shovel. So it would be a shovel. And I've gotten to the point where now I buy short tools instead of long-handled tools, and it treats my body a lot better.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
How about secrets for preserving food and making it last?
Well, I have always canned a lot. I recently, about 3 years ago, got a big Brit cellar, which was a marvelous thing. And I had the fortune about maybe 10 years ago to purchase a homemade commercial dryer.
Oh.
We also have a couple hundred fruit trees, so I dry some fruit.
Okay, so I have a few questions there. Well, are you going to tell us a little bit about what kind of things you canned?
I can all kinds of things. I can pickled beets, and I can green beans, and I can pickled asparagus, and of course pickles. I can soups regularly. I probably have 2 or 3 different kinds of homemade soups that I can that I keep all the time that I can on a regular basis. So I'm pretty much canning. You can pretty much find me canning almost any time of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I never thought about that. Homemade soups, those sound good. Anything different or unusual, or just like, you know, vegetable soup, or what kind of soups?
This is what I generally have. I generally have beef vegetable soup, which is my vegetables, and we always buy an organic beef. Mm-hmm. I always have split pea.
No.
I always have chili.
Oh.
And then the fourth one is generally random. But like I say, I feed people, and I feed people a lot of times on the go now who are coming in for lunch or something. So homemade canned soup it's a pretty nifty thing.
Yeah, and then you don't have to worry about it being frozen or something. Like, we freeze a lot of our soup. I haven't ever really canned soup, I don't think.
Yeah.
So that sounds good.
Yeah, it is.
And then, do you have, like, any tips for people if they were going to can something? Anything, any secrets that you learned or something to make it go more smoothly, or things that you wouldn't do? Or
I guess the biggest secret would be you need to set aside the time to do it and do it from beginning to end and pay attention to your canner. Like, I do a lot of pressure canning. Most of those soups are in pressure canners because they have meat in them. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay attention to your canner. I once blew up a pressure canner.
You did? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting when that happens.
Was it scary? Did it make a big mess?
Yeah, all of the above. What the short story is, there's a little rubber grommet on the top of a canner that seals. And I used to store my canner lid in the canner to keep the gauge from getting hit. And I had it in my garage, and the mice had chewed the seal on the rubber gasket. And I was canning away, and all of a sudden the gasket blew. Thank heavens my canner lid could not blow because it's screwed on. And the canner blew, and of course it blows steam out the top of it, so you have a really hard time getting close to it because it's blowing, it's sucking the water out of your canner, and it was blowing it on the ceiling of my kitchen, so it's raining, boiling hot water. And I finally got brave enough to get in and turn my stove off, which, thank heavens, was propane instead of electric, because it would have just kept going. And it sucked all the broth out of my soup and sprayed it all over the ceiling in my kitchen. It was a pretty big mess.
Oh, yuck. Yikes. And that would just terrify me if something like that happened and the thing was just... I'm just nervous enough when Mike cans it all with the pressure cooker. I always look at it. It feels like a science experiment to me.
Yeah, it was an experience for sure. And then, you know, after it's all done and you finally get your heart beating right, you have to clean it all up.
Mm. Was that at the place you're at now or up in the woods?
Yeah. Yes, it was in town.
Oh. How about, can you tell us anything about your root cellar? Because nobody's talked about a root cellar. And I know Mike is dying to build a root cellar for us. That's what he really wants.
Yeah, root cellars are the best thing ever. My root cellar is really large. It's concrete, poured concrete. It is got three different rooms to it, which is probably my favorite part. Like, one side is all food. So I call it my side, and the other side is my husband's side. One side is my side, and it's all food, canned, all my garden bulbs, flower bulbs, that kind of thing, all my garlic, all my fresh stuff is in one side. The other side is mostly all of the cooking utensils it takes me to preserve food is stored in that side. It's much larger. And wine. My husband's a big wine collector, so there's a lot of wine in my root cellar.
Nice. Okay. But, like, can you tell us a little bit about, like, why is a root cellar a good thing? Like, what things can you keep in there, and why does that store well? Like, what kind of food? You have the orchard, right, you said?
We do have the orchard. Another reason for the two sides, some food you can store together, some you can't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, fruits, you know, there's a lot of humidity to fruit, and there is not to other things. Like, I don't want my garlic stored where it's really humid. So those two things I wouldn't store together.
Okay.
Yeah. Root cellars, they're a cool, dark spot. So your food stays longer. It's a good thing. I waited a long time for a root cellar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we even gave our potatoes to somebody to hold for us down in their basement to keep them longer,
right,
till we get our root cellar built. And I'm sure ours isn't going to be fancy poured concrete. It'll be some nice rock work though. But Mike does some pretty fancy stuff with his rocks.
Well, some of my favorite root cellars are the old ones that they just built with rock into the sides of the mountains, you know, into the side of a hill. I mean, what a marvelous thing.
That's what we're going to do. He knows.
Right.
He's got it pretty planned out. I'm surprised he hasn't done it yet. He keeps threatening to take the backhoe and dig a big hole right by the house in the hill. One of these days. Do you have any... Oh, well, we were maybe going to talk about the pickled asparagus as far as like techniques for cooking foods maybe that other people might not have used, like weird or unusual is what I call them, but just something that's a little bit different.
Well, I do pickle asparagus, and my theory with canning is I like to have a jar a week, so that's about 52 jars a year. That's kind of always what I've done if I've canned. I was hesitant to talk about this because I don't grow asparagus, so I have to buy asparagus. I'm always searching out organic asparagus, which is kind of hard to find. The thing that I do put in my pickled asparagus is my garlic seed. So that's what I use for garlic. I just drop those little pea-sized garlic seeds in there. And
I see what you're saying now, because I was thinking you just meant the garlic cloves, but now that I know what garlic seed is, I get it. And your pickles, I don't know if I've had your pickled asparagus, but I know I've had your pickles, and they are so good. They're like some of the best pickles ever anywhere.
Yeah, that's a hit or miss for me, really. Some years they're good, some years they're not. I don't know why. I would guess it's the cucumber.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I think some things, I was just going to say, I was like, oh, well, maybe that's why my salsa is like that. I have a hard, that's like the only thing I've tried to can that I cook. And I really struggle with salsa. Like, I can make homemade salsa pretty good, but then when I go to can it, just something goes wrong.
Right.
I don't know why.
And it's different every year, you know? Canning is different.
And then finding organic asparagus, I could see, is hard. And growing asparagus has been kind of tricky for us. My friend Kavita, actually, that I interviewed, I think she's like episode 14 or 19 or somewhere down there, has a bee farm down in Alberton outside of Missoula. And she grows asparagus. But she, when she was on, she was talking about her kids, like they were so little, and she was telling them it was going to be 3 years before they had their first harvest. I actually ordered some seeds from this place in Idaho, I think, that one of my guests was telling me about, that this guy had gone to Russia back in the 70s and brought back a whole bunch of seeds from people like in Siberia that are for the Rocky Mountain type of climate. And so I ordered this huge thing of asparagus seeds for Mike to plant this year. But I don't know if you have
good
to put
luck.
Those in the fall or if that's going to work. He was like, why did you order these? I don't know if these are going to work. And something about, he was telling me about asparagus are very hard to get. I think your ground has to be warmer in the spring than it is here. He didn't seem, we always go searching for wild asparagus, like out on Lundeen Road and stuff. There's some wild asparagus and stuff in just different places. We've put some asparagus in. We got one stalk this year. He said that the chickens didn't get. Because I let the chickens loose for once.
In Wisconsin, asparagus is so prolific that people actually mow it down in their yards.
No.
Oh, yeah. I know people who fill their freezer, give it away, cook as much as they can, and eventually you just start mowing your lawn.
How come it's so expensive in the store all the time, then? I always think asparagus is so expensive.
Well, it is. I don't know why.
And then organic, I don't know if I've ever even seen organic asparagus in a store. Maybe.
Right.
I can't afford to shop in that section very often.
Right. Well, there was a woman in the Flathead that I went to 1 year to get organic asparagus, and then I never heard of her again, and I'm wondering if she had a crop failure or something. Because I don't really hear about big asparagus, you know, crops around here.
We'll let you know how it comes out. You should see Mike is planning, he's outdone himself this year, so you never know what's going to happen.
Oh, good.
Yeah. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
Well, it's not really a recipe, but I consider the center of a head of butterhead lettuce a delicacy. It's just the finest thing you can eat.
Nice. How about, got any tips for growing butterhead lettuce? Because I never had any luck with heads of lettuce. Like, I grow that black-seeded Simpson usually, and that's always been my best. But I just kind of pick the outer leaves off constantly, and I'm just always kind of pruning it, but I never really pick any heads. Got any tips for stuff like that?
Well, I haven't grown it in a lot of years. I do get some butterhead. That would be my first crop real early in the spring, but then it's over for me because it gets way too hot. But I did grow a lot of it when I lived up in the mountains, and fortunately I had a lot of space in my garden, so I could plant things and space them far apart? I think that's the answer, because you don't want one lettuce touching the next lettuce, or to me it would rot.
Oh, okay. Cool. Do you use the internet for gardening at all? You got a favorite internet resource to share with us at all?
Well, a place that I go to almost more for enjoyment than question is a site called Dave's Garden, davesgarden.com. And it's very broad, and it's a community of gardeners along with him, which I like, because I can zone in on gardening for this area or gardening for other areas like this. It's just got so much information. And I really like to look at other people's gardens.
Okay, cool. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine? Anything you can recommend?
My go-to book for gardening is this little obscure book called The Essential Kitchen Gardener. It's by Frieda Arkin. It's this book I picked up at a rummage sale somewhere along the way. And it's got really good gardening tips in it. Really good little tips.
Cool. Perfect. Yeah. Okay, so here's my final question. If there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? Like, for example, is there like a charity or an organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally or on a national or a global scale? Like, what would make a greener world for you?
Well, I think if we just get away with pesticides, that would create a huge difference.
Nice.
I also think that a very threatening thing, which those of us who live with really clean, pure water see more than maybe other people, is water. Water is pretty critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think once you haul water for any period of time,
absolutely,
you appreciate water a little bit differently than other people.
And if you're hauling beautiful, pristine water, mm-hmm, no other water compares then. You go, you know, it's the worst part about traveling is the water out there in the world.
Yeah. I haven't got to travel as much as you, so, but yeah, for sure. Water's just super important to me. I think that's mm-hmm a great point. And I think eventually that's what wars are going to be over. Water.
Right. You know,
because there's such a tiny percentage of our planet that actually has drinking water and water that we can use to grow food. And look at what's going on in California right now with the huge droughts. And they're saying there's only like 1 year's worth of drinking water available
right
in California. And, you know, it seems like they would be working. I don't know. I feel like I hear about it a lot all of a sudden this year. It seems like in the last month, especially or two, I keep hearing about the drought in California, but I haven't heard a lot of solutions being put forward. So hopefully.
Yeah. We better figure out our water.
Yeah. Because you know, one thing they talk a lot about is how much water goes to feeding cattle.
Mm-hmm.
That people don't seem to hear much about. So
mm-hmm,
yeah. Yep. Water is definitely super important. And clean water. I think that's a great point that you put up, and that we have such nice water here.
Mm-hmm.
We want to take care of it. How about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt and start their own garden?
Well, my tip would be one of my very favorite things to do, which is if you have access to a community garden and you have permission, go explore a community garden. Because really, they're like little personalities. There's all different kinds of, everybody gardens differently, and they all grow what is important to them. And it's a really beautiful thing to see and experience. And if you're lucky, you'll get to talk to somebody that'll shed some light on it.
Cool. Have you been to the community garden here that they started?
I have. I try to go to a community garden every time I see one, if I can, because I just find them fascinating. Like I say, they're people's personalities in that little 8x4 plot or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. Have you gone like on some of your trips at all to like some excite? Like, do you have a story to tell us about one that you liked anywhere in particular? Anything?
Well, my very favorite one that I've come across so far is in Portland, Oregon, and it is just this beautiful, beautiful garden, kind of going down a hillside. And I looked at it for years before I finally swung in there, and I got to walk through the whole thing. And actually, I got to meet the fella who was kind of the manager of the garden. So he took me all around and showed me all kinds of different people's plots. And I got to ask questions about things that were growing there, because, of course, they grow way different things than we can.
Uh-huh. Is that the one? They have that big rose garden in Portland. Was that near it, or is this a different?
Well, the rose garden is fabulous. If you ever get the chance, definitely do it. But no, this is, and I'm sure there are 10 or 20 or 30 community gardens in Portland. This is it, just one I was driving by. But the really cool part about it is half of it is private people's gardens, but across the road from it, in the other part of it, it's a church garden, and everything they grow there, they give away. And it was spectacular. It was just spectacular.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us and taking some time to talk with me this morning and just, you know, telling listeners about your garden experiences. And I hope it inspires them that what you could produce out of in a very difficult place to grow in a very challenging environment, that you could produce so much food, I hope inspires other people to try to grow just a little something in their part of the world, because you certainly overcame tons of obstacles and you know, and produced a lot of food just by yourself, and you're kind of a tinier person, so, and just super strong, but got out there and did it all, and then, like you said, you canned it and just fed tons of us, and we're always so gracious to share. So thanks for sharing your knowledge again.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. Thanks again for listening, and grow local.